This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Live 8 concerts were conceived to raise awareness about Africa's economic and health problems. The G8 summit starts tomorrow. To understand Africa's problems, it's helpful to understand Africa's history. In a few minutes, we're going to look at one small country, Eritrea, and see how the impact of colonialism, the Cold War, and border wars make this country a case study in what's gone wrong in Africa. First, we're going to hear from journalist Martin Meredith, who has covered Africa and written several books about it. His new book, The Fate of Africa, is about post-colonial Africa, but the introduction explains how Europe staked claim to virtually the entire continent at the end of the 19th century. Your introduction starts in the 19th century when European powers divided the continent. Was there actually a process in which the European powers met and decided on how to divide the continent?
They met over many years at meetings in London and Paris and Berlin and other European capitals, and not knowing very much about what was going on the ground in Africa, knowing little about the geography, and many of the boundaries that they decided on were entirely arbitrary. The lines that they drew on maps were very often straight lines or lines of latitude, lines of longitude, and what that meant was is that the colonies that they created were essentially artificial right from the start. There were in Africa at the time something like 10,000 African polities or African societies, and these were all amalgamated and carved up and reduced into essentially 40 European colonies.
And so that put that divided some African cultures, and then also put some African cultures who were in opposition to each other within the same state.
Yes, there were some peoples like the Bakongo of today's Congo, or indeed the Somali, who were divided up. Well, the Congo was divided up between the French, the Belgians, and the Portuguese, and the Somalis were divided up between Britain, Italy, and France. So that's an example, if you like, of the way in which some peoples were rent apart by the arbitrary divisions that Europe imposed. But in most other cases, because there were so many small African societies, they were all thrown together in a sort of jumble to create new states. And many of them had no common language or no common culture. Some of them, in some cases, were hostile to each other. They were hostile neighbors who fought wars occasionally. And many of these were actually thrown into an artificially created state and essentially kind of told to get on with it.
What did the colonial governments do to try to make countries out of these different cultures, who some of whom were feuding with each other?
Well, they, first of all, they started to use, if you like, European languages, which is one of the unifying factors. So the French obviously used, France used the French, and Britain used English. And that's one reason why today the most common languages that are spoken, apart from Arabic, are English and French and Portuguese. And that's the reason. Another sort of unifying factor was the way that European powers began to create modern economies. So they built roads and railways and ports, which began to provide a basic infrastructure. But there wasn't actually very much development that went on of this kind, because European powers believed that they had hundreds of years in which to work to kind of establish these new states. And they weren't particularly interested in investing it, investing resources there, other than to kind of keep law and order and maintain kind of public expenditure at a minimum. So there was pretty little development that actually went on for the first 20 or 30 years.
Leaders from the G8, Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Russia, and the U.S. are about to meet. Africa will be at the top of their agenda, and among the issues they're going to discuss are aid, debt cancellation, and trade. Let's just break this down a little bit and look at some of the issues they're going to be covering. What will they be considering regarding aid to African countries?
Well, there's a movement afoot to increase the level of aid to Africa by the West to overcome its huge difficulties. There is, however, a serious difference in policy. That is that the Bush administration is in favour of much more limited aid to Africa, arguing that a great deal of aid that's been given to Africa in the past has basically been a waste. The difference of opinion comes between Bush and Tony Blair's administration in particular, but other European governments too, which want a huge increase in aid, so that and applying it across the board, not to identify in the way that Bush wants particular countries which are willing to abide by good government. So that aid is one of the main issues in contention, and it's one of the ways in which, if you like, people are looking for progress, but I doubt that there will be very much.
And what about debt cancellation?
Debt cancellation is in some ways easier to agree on, and indeed a great deal has already been agreed. It has been provisionally agreed and will be confirmed by the G8 meeting on Wednesday to write off an amount of $40 billion of debt, which is owed to multilateral institutions like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. But since this was long-term debt, which was never expected to be repaid in the first place, the actual impact of debt cancellation is not going to be very great. The main impact is really kind of the extent to which debt interest does not have to be paid, and that amount is an almost trivial amount of $1.5 billion. But debt is by far the, if you like, the easiest route by which the West can address some of the problems in Africa. And for that reason, there's relatively early agreement on that issue.
And what about trade?
Trade is much, much more complicated, and there's not really likely to be much progress on that. It's complicated because there are so many entrenched interests in the West protecting their own producers with huge subsidies. The West, in general, spends roughly $370 billion a year propping up its own producers, its own farmers, with subsidies to ensure that they kind of survive. The consequence of this is that both American and European producers are able to produce everything from cotton to sugar to rice and a whole range of other agricultural commodities at a fraction of the price that African producers can produce their own products. And this has a very adverse effect on the ability of African farmers to grow what crops they like, because they're facing competition from Italian tomato growers, for example, or Dutch onion growers, who are able to produce products at much reduced prices. But because there are so many entrenched interests in that, and you can take US cotton farmers as an example, or indeed European tobacco growers, it's very unlikely that there will be any real progress on the trade issue.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Martin Meredith is the author of The Fate of Africa,